Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
Not a day goes by in Canada's big cities without the death or injury of a cyclist.
A cyclist is dead after being struck and killed in Burnaby. It happened at
struck by a truck overnight in the GTA. This happened less than 24 hours after a female cyclist was seriously injured in Little Portugal.
A 38-year-old man is dead after being hit by a truck while cycling through the intersection of Hunt Club and Merivale Roads.
It's particularly bad in Toronto right now, where Mayor John Tory is under fire after more than 90 cyclists and pedestrians died since he vowed to implement a program called Vision Zero, designed to eliminate those fatalities.
All the things that gives me sleepless nights and that has me needing to see us do more, it is this matter of people dying on the streets in safety-related incidents that take lives of cyclists and pedestrians.
Is this a case of impatient drivers recklessly endangering lives in a hurry to get where they're going? Or is it a case of careless cyclists and distracted pedestrians putting themselves at risk? What if it's neither? Maybe our cities just weren't meant to work this way. But could they? It's July 9th. I'm Jordan Heath Rowings, and this is The Big Story. Swedish filmmaker Fredrik Gerton is the director of the aptly named Bikes vs. Cars, a 2015 documentary that grapples with modern city transit in urban landscapes that were designed for an entirely different way of life. Hi, Fredrik.
Hello, Jordan. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
It's good. I'm back to work after what we have our midsummer holiday, which is like always out in the woods and drinking too much and sleeping too little.
Oh, man, that sounds perfect. We're calling you in Malmo, Sweden right now, in bike heaven.
Yeah, Malmo's where I live, which is the third city of Sweden, is the best bike city in Sweden. And I think rated the sixth best bike city in the world. So it's good, and it's also improving all the time. So we get more and more separated bike lanes and more safety, more bicycle parking spaces and so on. So it's really cool. And a lot of people out on bikes all the time.
Do you cycle yourself?
Of course, yeah. I cycle all my life. Only because it's the easiest way to move around. It's a very, very natural behavior in Malmo, Sweden.
Have you ever been in an accident on your bicycle with a car?
Yes, I have.
What happened?
It was a rainy day and quite dark, and a car didn't see me. But it was really slow traffic, so I mean, I just fell over. I didn't really harm myself, but it's a reminder that we are all out there together. It was actually two women from the customs who were driving a car. And she came out and she started to cry and hugged me. So we were standing there and I had to comfort her because she had. And then in the end, we had to drag my bike to repair shop together because my back wheel was damaged. And she paid for my bike repair. And then we just went on.
That sounds like something that doesn't happen very much here. I guess my question has a lot to do with the way we talk about it, because your film is called Bikes versus Cars, and I know a lot of people who paid attention to this problem in Toronto and elsewhere will remember our former mayor, Rob Ford, who was fond of yelling about the war on the car.
Roads are built for buses, cars, and trucks, not for people on bikes.
And now that in many big cities we've seen a lot of cyclist fatalities, cyclist groups are saying that it's a war zone out there. Where does this language of conflict come from?
Well, in my film, Bike versus Cars, I'm talking about the conflict in city planning. I'm not talking about the conflict between motorists or cyclists, because I don't think there is a real conflict, because most of us are both. But in city planning, there is certainly a conflict. Poor city planning, which a lot of Toronto can show a lot of examples of. Poor city planning has a lot of victims. One group of victims are people, you know, harmed or killed. But of course, also quite often people killed driving a car. Or people sitting in traffic and not going anywhere. They are also victims of poor city planning. So poor city planning is creating a lot of problems in a city. And the only way to change that is to have a better city planning that kind of caters for all.
Why do you think we blame each other, cyclists versus drivers? I mean, that's a really interesting point you have about it. The root of it is city planning. But when you see drivers talking about crazy cyclists and cyclists talking about dangerous drivers, so they're not blaming the city planning. They're blaming each other.
Unfortunately, with late Mayor Ford was that he was a very smart politician and also a very populistic politician. So he knew that there was a lot of frustration out there by people sitting stuck in traffic. So, of course, he wanted to win the election. So he addressed that frustration in a very successful way. The only problem is that now, all these years later, is the traffic better? Did Rob Ford deliver anything to the frustrated motorists? I don't think so. I mean, he won the election, but the traffic is the same. So I think what we saw in Toronto with Rob Ford is kind of repeated all over the world, because there are so many people frustrated in traffic. So, of course, that's votes you can get by trying to make them seen or that they are like included in the debate. But the answer to people's frustration in cars is not making it worse for other people in traffic. It's like the other way around. We have to create a system in traffic which caters for all. If the bicyclists are on separated bike lanes, if they feel safe and happy, there will be less conflict. And I tell you, in where I live or in Copenhagen across the sea here, there are much less conflicts because we are not really into each other's faces all the time. We don't have that kind of conflict because the bicyclists are seen and understood. The traffic flows and it's safe. You know, my kids can go to school with a bicycle and I can feel safe because I know there is a route where they can bike, where they will never encounter any cars. And that's how it should be.
How did your politicians and your city planners convince people that this was in everyone's best interest? Because like you said, our politicians' goals are winning elections, and it's a lot harder to win elections when you say, actually, you guys should be happy to see people bike, and you know, it's much easier to play to the frustrated driver like Ford did. What strategies can we use from Copenhagen and Sweden and elsewhere?
I think the good thing that you could use is actually that there are cities in the world where traffic actually flows better than Toronto. And they are also winter cities. I mean, we also have winters here. So it's not about, I mean, I bike all year round. So it's not about the weather. But I mean, how do you preach that love is better than hate? I mean, because the bottom line is actually that easy. And then if you try to understand the development in the cities like Copenhagen and my city, Malmo, it's maybe that here the bicycle never died as it had done in many other cities.
It feels like probably because where we are in Canada and the problems Toronto has seen recently with pedestrian and cyclist deaths, it can feel like Toronto is the worst city in the world for cyclists and pedestrians.
And I would say, for example, in my city, the speed limit is now, they put it down to 40 in town, and which normally 50. So I think in Toronto, you could probably put down the speed limit to 30.
There's a movement in Toronto right now to lower those speed limits, and it's facing a ton of resistance from drivers, from some of the city councillors. How can we convince people who, like you said, have a lot of difficulty seeing that more cyclists on the road is better for cars? How can we convince them that this needs to happen, even though it seems like you're going to be going slower, right?
Yeah, it is a bit tricky because it gets so emotional. You have your car, you're proud of your car, your car has all this power. But the sad thing is to see people in cars when they're sitting in traffic, and there suddenly it opens up the space for like 200-300 meters, and then boom, people put the pedal, you know, and they go quick, and then they stop at the red. next red light. You know, it's like it's kind of there is so much frustration built in sitting in traffic. So that's why people, when there is a possibility of speeding, people do it, because it's like it is this feeling of power. But if we are more reasonable, we will understand that it doesn't really change my way of moving. I mean, science knows that if you put down the speed limit to 30, there will be almost no people killed in traffic. 40 is still a bit too speedy, but it's so much better. And I can tell you in my city, this happened just 2 years ago when they put down the speed limit, and people were frustrated in the beginning. I don't hear anything about it now. It's just a natural thing.
It seems like you kind of have to work against people's worst instincts, almost like those, you know, those tests they give to kids where they can have one marshmallow now or two marshmallows later.
Yeah, but I think there's one very interesting thing. Canada was one of the first countries in the world to ban smoking in restaurants. Remember? And do you remember the debate before the ban came?
Oh, I covered that debate. I remember it well.
Yeah. The bars are going to close. There will be no people at the restaurants any longer. Everything will be terrible. And it's like the day after, everybody was so happy. Wow. Why didn't we do this before? So I think it's literally like that also with traffic, that you have to create that reality. And then people will say, wow, this is nice, you know. And to people who need their cars, everybody who needs their car should drive the car. I have no problem with that, but they should start to love people on bikes, because they are donating space to them. They're giving space to them on the streets.
Where's the tipping point when a city's no longer dominated by the car and people are starting to realize that there's more space on the roads? How do we get there?
I mean, unfortunately, the only way to get there is to make more people move over to bike, and because then the change will come, even if the infrastructure is not there. But the problem is when more people are moving over to bikes, and this is what you are seeing now in Toronto, and you have seen it a lot in London and other cities, is that you have more killed bicyclists. City after city, the people on bikes is growing everywhere. I mean, if you go to London, there's now a bike highway through a whole city. If you go to Paris, then the number of bikes is growing every year. It's like it's wonderful to bike in Paris. If you go to Berlin, if you go to many, I mean, there is a big debate in Barcelona, also in Madrid. I mean, this is all over the world. And, I mean, you go to New York City, you can see there's so much more people on bike. And the bike infrastructure is coming up, not in the speed that it should, and there is still killed bicyclists. All this can be better. Of course, we also need to respect and love each other and be more careful out in traffic. But it's very much a design issue, and street design and separated bike lanes. It's like it's not so complicated. It's not rocket science, and it's not that expensive.
So one more question for you, and this is a little bit of an uncomfortable question, but this is what drivers in Toronto are saying. Are cyclists and pedestrians who are being too aggressive or too distracted to blame for this at all?
I mean, we are all individuals, people who drive cars and people who are riding bikes. And I mean, I don't think you can talk about people in as they were all in the same group or in the same party. I'm sure there are. I mean, if you go to London, that the former mayor, Boris Johnson, he was also riding a bike. He was conservative. And then you have somebody who is left-leaning who also rides a bike. I mean, who are all these groups? I mean, we are all citizens of a city. And, of course, there are stupid people on bikes and ignorant people on bikes. And there are ignorant people who ride cars. And there are very nice people who ride cars. It's like I don't think it's a way forward to kind of to put people in different corners. It's not a winning game.
Perfect.
More love, less hate.
What's the one message? Is that the one message that you want people to take away, bicyclists or drivers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if we start to see each other in a more caring way, I think that will help. You need your car. So bicyclists have the right to feel safe on the street. I mean, that's kind of fair. I mean, I want you, when you drive your car, to feel safe, and the other way around. And that will make a better world for all.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. I'll let you go. Enjoy your beautiful Swedish summer.
Thank you very much. Take care.
That was The Big Story. And no matter what side of this debate you're on, whether you're a driver, a cyclist, or a pedestrian, you really should take the time to watch Frederick's film, because it doesn't take a side. It's about our cities and how we use them and the ideals of cyclists and drivers and what those modes of transit mean to them. I think you'll kind of have a different perspective on your morning commute afterwards. You can find it at www.bikes-vs-cars.com. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. And we're on your social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Big Story Podcast. Don't forget to share and tell your friends. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.